The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, Fermentable Planet Earth. Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are a podcast that airs every Monday at 7 o'clock on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, but we are also archived on iTunes. You can find us there.
Yeah, I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi. We are your co-hosts. Mary, welcome back.
Thank you.
How was Vegas?
It was good. So I was at a day job meeting in Vegas. We don't get much time, but I did get to sneak away for a couple of hours and check out the craft beer scene in Vegas. I was restricted to the Strip, but I will tell you that I have to go to Vegas at least every year or two for my day job.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I've always been disappointed. It's really hard to find craft beer there, especially on the Strip. But there is a wonderful place called Public House that's in the Venetian that I drank and ate at a few times. They have a delightful poutine version of poutine that has braised oxtail. It was absolutely delicious. I had it twice in 2 days. And a solid selection of craft beer. So I had a really wonderful Imperial Stout from Squatters, which is a brewery that we don't see out here. And then I had a really good Citra Rye as well from a Henderson brewery. But anyway, it was just great to see a good craft beer place on the Strip. So I was happy.
I'm jealous. But we had fun in your absence. Kyler missed you, though, too. Before we get started, today's episode is actually, we're going to talk about lacto-fermented vegetables and things of the like. And we have a wonderful guest, Bihana. It's because we talked about
Bahia.
We just had a long conversation about how hard it was to say her name, and actually I was saying her name fine before we started talking about it, and now we confused it with all these other different variations, and now B.
B is fine.
B, thank you for joining us today.
Yes. We have a couple more announcements, though, before we get into the meat of the matter. One is New York Craft Beer Week is coming up
on
New York City Beer Week is coming up on Friday. It's put on by the New York City Brewers Guild. And it kicks off Friday with an opening party that is unfortunately sold out, but there is a ton of events and participating bars that are running events or food and beer specials or have special breweries in for the entire week going through. It ends on next Sunday, right?
Next Sunday, yeah. The closing party will be at Italy at Birreria. The couple key events are that opening party, of course. Alex Hall is having a cask festival in Williamsburg, the 7th Williamsburg Cask Beer Festival at DBA Brooklyn. And we actually brewed a beer together for it that we called Hall Pass. I'm very excited about it. I just put it into the firkin earlier today. It's basically a nod to Dark Star Brewing's Sunburst, which is where he was formerly employed, and he also is an employer, or he works with me and Chris Post with Wandering Star, and so Wandering Star will have a couple kegs or casks there as well that Alex has actually doctored.
Yeah, and the way the Cask Fest works is it starts on Saturday. Alex is actually putting it on for 4 days this year. That's new. It previously was, I think, was only three. And he's going to have around 16 casks. Most are rare or very unusual, available.
Including the doctored beers of Wandering Star. So he did a mild at heart infused with Chinese stem ginger, and he did a firkin of Burt's Disqualified Stout with French oak spirals and American spirals that American oak spirals that he had infused with port wine. So
yeah,
I'm very, very excited about
that. Yeah, and definitely they have some one-of-a-kind beers that you won't see anywhere else. It's all pay by the glass. There's no entrance fee. There's usually a couple of sizes of glasses available, so if you want to try, you know, everything or more than you normally do, you can get some small pours. And then on Sunday, he's going to have a very special vintage bottle raffle. And all the proceeds to this bottle raffle will actually go to the family of Ray Dieter, the late and great Ray Dieter, who is one of the co-founders of DBA.
That's right. And among those prizes is a 101-ounce bottle of Del Borgo Real Extra. So it's those giant bottles. There's a lot. I have this ridiculous list in front of me of all the things that we raffled off. We're excited about.
Yeah, it's titled in all caps, Mega Beer Raffle, and it is. I think that's gonna kick off around 4 p.m. So that's a good cause, and it should be a lot of fun if you want to head out to Williamsburg to DBA Brooklyn.
And then another key event, very important and very cool. One of the proprietors of Jimmy's Number 43 and host of Beer Sessions Radio, and he's also eating dinner right out there here at Roberta's.
We're looking
he's
right at tonight. Him.
Jimmy Carboni is having is hosting Brewer's Choice. That was Brewer's Choice.
Yes.
On Wednesday the 27th. Very, very advisable to go. We'll all
That's
be there.
That's at City Winery. And I can't remember how many breweries he's going to have. But again,
24 plus.
24 plus. And they, usually the brewers, several of them will bring some very unusual and very tasty things. It's a good social hang. So that's that. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
And it'll all be paired with food. And some of those foods might be lacto-fermented vegetables.
Could be.
We hope. What are lacto-fermented vegetables? I know very little about our topic today. I just use lacto for brewing beer, but how does it relate to foods? Why do they exist? What's going on? Hi, B.
Hi, guys. So lacto-fermenting vegetables, they can include lactose, which would usually be in the form of whey. So companies like Brooklyn Brine for their lacto-fermented stuff, I know that they use whey as a starter culture to get things going. You can also just preserve vegetables with salt. It's just an old form of preservation. And basically, the ways you do it are either with sauerkraut, you just mix basically chopped cabbage or something like that with salt. The salt draws out the natural liquid that provides a barrier at the top that allows the cabbage to cure. And keeps like mold and other bad things away. You can also just make a salt brine and pour it over vegetables. So if you're going to ferment green beans like I have here, or something like that, you would do just a liquid salt brine, and then you'd use a weight to keep the vegetables submerged under the surface. But it's basically just an old form of preserving fresh produce.
Before refrigeration. Canning.
Yep, exactly.
And also gives a lot of good kind of health benefits. Mm-hmm. It's very tasty.
Yep. Everything, foods are preserved in a way so that they're totally raw. All of their like natural enzymes are preserved, and a lot of they're, you know, supposed to be very good for like your digestion and health because those enzymes are still all there, and they're actually in a lot of ways more readily available for your body because of the way the fermentation process has kind of like broken them down. And
how did you get into lacto-fermenting vegetables?
I got into it because between working at a grocery store, there's a lot of produce waste that's still good. But so, you know, kind of come home with a large bag of zucchini or summer squash or something like that and be like, well, I can't possibly eat all of these. And there's only so much zucchini bread I can bake. So I was reading about it and it was like, oh, you can, you know, make zucchini pickles basically. So it was kind of a way to preserve a lot of the excess produce that was available in a way so that we'd have it to eat for weeks and months instead of just like the short period of time that it would be good fresh otherwise.
And I think, so I've been reading, I haven't actually lacto-preserved any vegetables either. I've done some other methods. But I was reading, and basically the kind of the same truths that are for lacto-fermented beer are also lacto-fermented vegetables. Like, they don't like oxygen, so that's why you use, like, a plate and a weight on top to keep the oxygen out. That helps promote the lacto cultures, and then also that helps discourage other bacteria cultures.
Exactly.
And I think the salt also is a balance, too, because that also discourages other non-good bacteria from getting in there.
In the summer, I'll usually use more salt because in the summer you're more likely to get weird bacterial growth just because the heat promotes like bacteria growth. So you use more salt, and then in the winter you can do a lot like lower salt ferments. And then because of the colder temperatures, it's just you don't have to worry about bad bacteria so much
taking over.
Yeah.
And then of course lactobacillus gives off lactic acid. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, like when you have dill pickles or sour pickles, they're sour. And that also discourages other bacteria from growing, just like in beer.
Yep.
So it's kind of, you know, there's a lot of similarities there. And then the other thing, I know I was reading, because a lot of times, like you said, you can just use salt. Now, do you ever use whey to encourage cultures?
I've always just used salt. I mean, I kind of turned to it because canning is obviously the other main form of preserving vegetables, but I used to have long debates with my roommates because I was freaked out about canning because it was like, oh, you have to be sanitary. And it actually wasn't until I'd been brewing for a while when I was like, oh, wait, I obviously can be sanitary because I am for beer, so maybe I should just try canning stuff. Right. But canning's a long process. You know, you have to do the whole hot water bath. You have to be very sterile. Whereas with lactofermentation, I mean, in 5 minutes, I can have all my vegetables preserved and going. You know, you leave them at room temperature to let them ferment, and then you can basically store them indefinitely in the refrigerator because the colder temperatures in the refrigerator will just kind of halt the fermentation so it doesn't totally rot. Because basically all that it is it's just a controlled rot.
Right. Like beer and cheese and everything else fermented.
Exactly.
The other thing, because I was reading, so a lot of times in the, they were talking about in warmer weather where you know you have to be a little bit more worried about other bacteria, is that if you introduce whey, that just speeds up the whole lacto formation and acidity of the vegetables. And then also, they were talking about fruit, doing lacto preserved or fermented fruit, and they said that actually you need to add whey too, because I guess it doesn't have the same balance
of, like, I guess the acidity. I was just telling Chris that, like, I've done kimchis before. There's like this style of Korean, like, it's like a water kimchi, and so it's a lot of like cucumbers, not really any spice, and you'll toss fruit in, so like pears, apples, things like that. And I've done that with just salt, but it goes very, very quickly. The sugars in the fruit just really speed up that process. So I mean, it's in a, you may want to leave it fermenting at room temperature for a day and then get it into the fridge.
Right.
So that it slows it down and doesn't get like too funky.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. So your fermented vegetable or vegetable product, we're sitting here and Bee's brought us some dilly beans and some kimchi. And then you also have some garlicky habanero hot sauce.
Yeah.
What and are dilly beans?
So dilly beans
What's
are...
a dilly, yo?
Dill. The herb. So dilly beans, it's basically a pickled green bean, and traditionally they actually would be, I think, like a vinegar pickle. It's like an old New England thing, I think, but you can do them with just a salt brine. So instead of pouring like a vinegar, a dill, like, you mix your spices, including like dill, mustard seeds, whatever you want to use, and traditionally you'd pour like a salty vinegar mixture over them and use that to cure them. But I realized you can do it with just salt water, and then they're great for Bloody Marys or eating with sandwiches. Or
they just don't preserve as long, or they're not as predictable. Is that scratch the preservation? But they're not as predictable. That's why that's why industrial, they use vinegar more often than they do lacto fermented.
Yeah, lacto fermented stuff. I mean, it depends on the produce, the temperature, the amount of salt. There's a lot more variables. Mm-hmm. And again, like a canned vegetable, you can put in your cupboard at room temperature and it will be good for years. Whereas a lacto-fermented thing, you do eventually need to introduce refrigeration. And so that's kind of the key. But there are a lot of companies out there that do sell lacto-fermented stuff. The big ones are Hawthorne Valley. They do a full line of lacto-fermented vegetables. And then... and also, it was their dilly beans that inspired me to do it, because they stopped selling them because I guess wasn't cost effective, or they didn't have enough beans or something. And I was like, oh man, I can't get those anymore. I'm totally gonna make some.
Yeah.
And then
that's another reason we all brew.
Styles. Exactly. Yeah. And then Real Pickles out of Massachusetts is another big one that does a lot of lacto fermented stuff. And there's a bunch of new local kimchi companies too. Mama O's is out of New York,
yeah,
and they're
delicious.
Really cool. Yeah, they do a lot of really good kimchis.
We hope to do a kimchi episode completely on kimchi and the variety of kimchi soon.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
Kimchi's you make it a little different than sauerkraut, too. Like sauerkraut, you generally just crush up the cabbage itself with the salt to draw out the liquid. And with kimchi, you usually use the Napa cabbage and you actually soak it in a salt brine overnight. And then you add in your chili paste and other vegetables. And it's the salt from the chili paste and the residual salt left in the soaked Napa cabbage. So it's a slightly different process.
Now, do you do all small batches, or do you have a bigger crock? Or?
Yeah, I use mostly big 1 gallon mason jar or sun tea jar. I usually I lived in Minnesota for a long time, and junk stores are great for finding 99-cent 1 gallon wide mouth jars, which are really useful. Or 1/2 gallon mason jars are good. You just want something that you can fit your hand inside to pack all the vegetables down, and something that the lid isn't so big that it's hard to find a way to cover it, because you do want to put some people say, oh, you want to leave it to expose it to all of the cultures, but there's plenty of stuff on your produce to begin with, so you usually want to put a paper towel or a piece of fabric over the top just to keep dust and flies and things like that out.
And isn't it after the initial fermentation you want to keep oxygen away too. Is that correct?
So yeah, the oxygen is kept away by. That's why you weight everything down. So it's the salty liquid on the top, and that's what creates the oxygen barrier.
And then once you put it in the fridge, you usually put a lid on it and then stick it in the fridge.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we're going to take a small little break, and we'll be back to talk more on lacto-fermented vegetables.
And other stuff.
And other stuff.
Today's program has been brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run commercial offset print house that brings together environmentally friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Founded in 1998 by Eugene Lee and his father, Cam Lee, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and green technology. Rolling Press prints using soy and vegetable inks, uses a variety of certified and recycled papers, and they incorporate a chemical-free production process. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Bahia.
But you could just say Bahia.
Hey, welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We were just discussing Bahia's name over here. We love that name, as challenging as it is. Hi, B.
Hi, Chris.
So we know you through Brooklyn Homebrew and as a great brewer, and you guys do beer kits over there.
Yep.
And how do you make those kits over there?
Most of the kits are the two owners, Ben and Danielle's, recipes. A lot of them are recipes that they had entered in homebrew competitions. A lot of the recipes, if you've ever bought one, you'll notice there's a little ribbon in the corner, and that like corresponds to whatever place it won in the competition nice. It was entered in. But the kits have expanded to include recipes from other people who work at the shop. I think probably the first one was Kyler's Cascadian Dark Ale. He's got his name right on
Kyler
it.
Kyler was our guest last week, yes.
And then some of the other ones are just recipes. Another person who works there, Dave, he was working on a double recipe for a while. He's really worked hard on perfecting. That kit only exists as an all-grain one. A lot of the...
You have one, right?
And I have one, too. The Bushwick Brown Ale.
Right on.
But yeah, if you look in the all-grain kits, there's actually a lot more all-grain kits than the kind of partial mash ones that you see. Because a lot of us, if we have an all-grain kit and we think it's a good recipe, we'll kind of, you know, bring it in. If other people are like, oh, yeah, that's a good beer, then they're like, okay, like, we'll make that into a kit. So... Both Benjamin and Danielle also have some more all-grain kits that just have never kind of gotten converted down to a partial mash. So
I like that you guys do that. I mean, that you simplify it for people, like giving them a good recipe for a starter, to start people, and then
yep.
people can... And you list all the ingredients in it. You don't just give them the grist, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah, you get a recipe that's got all the ingredients, our yeast recommendations, the hops, the times you'd add them. Some of the all-grain kits, there's like a cherry saison that includes like cherry puree, stuff like that. And then again, that's one that's just all grain. There isn't a partial mash version yet.
Fantastic. So they can take those and then kind of what they like about it. You know, they can start adjusting, you know, from that beginning.
Buying kits, a lot of people, you know, they'll be like, oh, I really like that IPA kit, but I want to try switching out the hops. And we're totally okay with doing that. You know, you can swap them out and try something different, make a single hop IPA, you know, but take our base grain recipe. So then, you know, even if you're someone who, like, is just getting into brewing and don't really know about, like, you know, the differences in, like, base malts and crystal malts and how to combine them to actually get a successful style, you can take our base recipe and still be able to play with it a little bit.
Speaking of playing, have you ever played with taking some of your lacto-fermented vegetables and adding them to your beer?
I haven't ever done that, although eating lacto-fermented vegetables with beer does go together really well. Yeah.
Hand in hand.
Yeah, they go very well. And a lot of people I know who are brewers say they're nervous about lacto-fermenting in their house because of getting a house culture, the same way, you know, with sour beer contamination, people get nervous. But, I mean, I keep my yeast starters on the shelf next to my fermented vegetables, and I haven't had any issues with spontaneous souring. Yeah. Knock on wood. I think
they
good,
don't float.
Good good sanitation is important, and it's, you know, it's like anything else.
Exactly. So I know, because we were talking about how you get your, that's how you started lacto-fermenting, is you get groceries. Now, you probably get mostly organic vegetables.
Yeah, that is one of the perks, is that all of our produce at the place where I work is organic. And so, it is nice to not have to worry. Yeah, to start with that. You know, if I am making something specific and, you know, want to make kimchi and go out and buy vegetables, I definitely do try to buy organic when I'm fermenting stuff, just because, you know, you want to know what you're putting in there. But I mean, that said, I definitely also do buy just conventional produce, and it works just as well.
The one thing that I was reading is that they recommend that you start with, if you're, especially if you're using, conventional produce, you start with pretty fresh produce, because you don't want anything that's, you know, starting to go, because that could already have bacteria that would be introduced and take off faster than your lacto.
Yeah. That is definitely always recommended in recipes you see for lacto fermentation. The way that I get my produce, because it usually is, again, kind of the produce that's unsellable.
Right.
So a lot of the time, you know, with hot peppers, they'll start to go bad. So I'll end up with a couple pounds of hot peppers that, you know, I have to trim off the bad spots, which isn't ideal and isn't necessarily recommended, but I have fermented very successfully.
Right.
So,
when I think, I mean, in that case, as long as you're trimming away the bad
parts. Exactly, yeah.
And then we're also talking about hot sauce, which is a slightly different process, similar, but tell us how you make your fermented hot sauce.
So to make fermented hot sauce, I'll use a lot of just whatever type of hot peppers I have, and then sometimes I'll throw in some sweet peppers just because it can get really spicy. And then I like to use garlic or onions, sometimes I don't, but basically it's a similar process to sauerkraut. You just mix the vegetables with some salt and kind of squeeze and crush it to draw the liquid out of them. Peppers have a lot of water content, so it's pretty easy. I'll ferment it usually I'll do a very salty ferment, so I can ferment it for a long time and really develop the flavor, and then after it's fermented for a month or two, when it seems like it's going to have a good flavor, at that point I'll put it into a blender and turn it into a hot sauce. And I got the idea for that because, like, Tabasco is traditionally, it's a fermented peppers that are mixed with vinegar. And so there's, like, a lot of other precedent for fermented hot sauces out there.
Right. And you could also add, like you said, if you wanted that Tabasco type of flavor, you could add vinegar after you blended
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
To your liking.
Yeah, and you're not really, like, you know, degrading your fermented thing, because vinegar technically too is also a fermented product.
Right.
So.
We talked about vinegar a couple weeks ago with our friend John, who does a lot of vinegars. So.
Yeah.
And gifted you recently with a mother of vinegar, which very fun stuff.
Yes. It looks just like a kombucha SCOBY.
Yeah. They are very similar.
Yeah. We haven't decided what we're going
like
to ferment
alien
or turn into vinegar. Yeah. It does kind of look alien.
Didn't you guys do a big cider project?
Yes. We got to get into that.
We do. We still haven't tasted them, so we don't know where they're going yet at this moment. But at this point, they might be leaning towards the vinegar side. We'll see.
We have some other, I mean, I have some sour beer that could probably be boiled down. It's slightly acetic already.
Yeah.
It could be boiled down and then add the mother too.
Yeah.
And see what happens. So we have some options for sure.
And we have the pressure to do it with things coming up.
Yeah. once we clean up that closet.
Yep.
I was going to say, so basically, I mean, lacto, I think one thing, you know, people are nervous about fermentation.
Uh-huh.
Brewing is definitely more of a different kind of process because, you know, there is so much sanitation and people, I think, have a better understanding. Whereas lacto fermented vegetables is kind of, I feel like, is mysterious to people.
Yeah, I think it makes people nervous. And, you know, it can definitely get a scum or scuzz on top. It's kind of an ugly, congealed, foamy thing, which you'll see recipes just say, just skim it off. And I think people are a little bit nervous about that. But that's the interesting thing is that even if you had a jar of sauerkraut or something and it did get like a mold on the top, the way that the culture works is because the salt brine creates this oxygen barrier, basically you can really just take off anything gross on the top and what's underneath will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're really nervous, you know, don't do it. But usually taste is really, you know, if it tastes okay to you, it's probably okay to eat because you have created this environment where nothing bad is going to grow.
Right. It's not too acidic. I mean, yeah. Nothing, this bad bacteria that everyone's scared of, it's, they cannot survive in those type of acids. So they're not able to. You're not going to get sick from that bad bacteria get down to that level of acidity.
Yeah. And I mean, Wild Fermentation is a really great book by Sander Katz, and he's out of IDA, which is a big collective down in Tennessee. And I mean, I just would recommend anyone to get that book because it really breaks it down in a very accessible way. And it's got recipe ideas, but it's basically just, you know, different methods of fermentation and kind of really trying to demystify it and encourage people to just go out and try it.
And speaking of that, he's actually speaking at the Museum of Natural History in Manhattan. I believe it's April 24th. I just bought tickets.
Yep.
Awesome. So, yeah, so I just bought tickets for us last night because we've never seen him speak. We have the Wild Fermentation and the Art of Fermentation.
Yeah, yep. He just came out with that other one.
Which is a huge, massive volume of all kinds of delightful information. But if you're interested in that, if you're in New York City, please go to the Museum of Natural History site. It's called the Art of Fermentation. That brings me to another thing, another event that's going on before I forget. Heritage Radio Network is having a series of salons, and the first one is Wednesday.
This Wednesday at 7 o'clock to 10 p.m. at the Heritage Radio Network headquarters here in Bushwick.
Yep.
Yay!
Which is on, it's just right around the corner from where Bird is. It's on Siegel Street. And basically, it's $20 to get in. It's going to be a ton of hosts. Chris and I are both going to be there. You get beer from Blue Point Brewing Company, bison from Thunderheart Bison, chips and salsa from Brooklyn Salsa Company, and there's going to be beets by Jerry Jones and Black Lauren. So it should be just a good kind of hang. You get food, a little drink, and get to meet some of the hosts of Heritage Radio Network. So we encourage you to come out to that if you would like to meet us and meet some really interesting people.
Come see why we have faces for radio. There it is. I'll be here all week. Well, at least one day of the week. Every week. Mondays at 7 p.m.
Man.
Heck yeah. This is very exciting. I'm really. I love this. I love doing this show because, and part of the reason we're doing this is because, I mean, I'm curious about all these other things, but I don't know much about it. I mean, I know much far less than Mary knows about doing.
I've been dabbling
stuff
over the years.
We only just started cohabitating, which is also very exciting. And things are getting moldy just by accident, but you know, or maybe they started there. They're getting cleaned up. But I definitely want to get into doing lacto fermented vegetables, and it's incredibly, incredibly easy. Like, I think my take home is, you know, you just throw some salt on some vegetables, and
there's certain ratios, and again, like that's where like getting Wild Fermentation or something like that, or just like reading a recipe. But
yeah, and there's a lot of recipes online.
Yep.
As well.
So we will. We're a little bit behind in updating our website, but we will add some links to how to. Like some basic links on where to some resources.
Yes. On our website, fermentaboutit.com. And maybe B will contribute a recipe for you guys to try. But we just wanted to, hopefully this show has demystified the art of lacto-fermented vegetables and hot sauces. So
is it advisable? So if I have some vegetables in my refrigerator and I forgot they were there, they're starting to go wrong. I should just, even though it's not ideal because they're not fresh, Are they salvageable or usable? If they're
rotten, you don't want to use them.
Right.
But if they have a bad spot that you can cut out, you can use what's remaining. But I mean, I wouldn't take like
something I wouldn't cook to eat.
Exactly. If you wouldn't eat it that day, you probably shouldn't ferment it.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. It's not gonna save something that's already rotten.
Okay. Yeah, I'm always looking for those. You know, how can I make the most? I tend to forget.
So you've just got to realize 2 days before it gets to that bad point, and then preserve it. Yeah.
But a lot of times you'll buy vegetables or something for a recipe, and then you don't use them all. And you don't have a chance to. So that's a great
people with
ideal.
CSAs. It's a great way to use your CSA if you are just feeling overwhelmed in the summer by getting too much of one thing. It's a really great way to just quickly preserve a bunch of it and make it
point,
last.
Actually. And please join a CSA. It's worth it.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for today.
Thanks for listening to Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. Come to the party. See you on Wednesday. Enjoy Craft Beer Week. New York City Beer Week.
Yep.
Brewer's Choice, Jimmy Carboni.
But we'll be back next Monday live at 7 p.m. And we'll have some updates on New York City Beer Week and what's going on. So we hope that you'll tune in next week.
That's right. See you then.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.